Good evening, everyone, and welcome to our continuation of some in-depth work. I hope it's in-depth a little bit on A Treatise in Cosmic Fire. And I haven't made a precise calculation, but I'm sure if we continue to the year 2100, we'll get this thing done. But meanwhile, I would say this, that the teaching is a great sphere of interconnected light. And we can study any part of it, and it has relevance to every other part as well. Now, that may be hard to fathom, but you know, sometime get together with your friends if they're studying any book, and choose two topics, one you're reading and something else someone recommends, and see if you know the method of traveling from one point to another. There is always a pathway. And so we're on our way to planetary omniscience. Well, that means knowing everything about the planet, the planetary logos, and all the parts of the planet, the globe lords and the chain lords and the Sanat Kumara and the great planetary logos and the Buddhas of activity. I mean, knowing all about these great points of tension. When I refer to a being as a point of tension, there is something in it. So we developed the skill under Mercury. Remember how close Master DK is to the planet Mercury and to the planet Gemini. He had so many of his close outer co-workers who carried the Gemini vibration and hence the Mercury vibration. And Mercury has all of these pathways from one thing to another. And when that network of relationships in the great science of relations is finally developed, then you begin to have really the higher aspect of pure reason, which is found on the Buddhic plane. It's the real intuition. And it's not just a bunch of great thoughts. You can have those and work in the abstract mind, but it goes further, and it is filled with light and illumination and connectedness. We've been working here just, you know, a little segue here about the page 71 of Cosmic Fire. The monad has a close connection with the mental unit. And of course, that means the soul has a close connection with the astral permanent atom, and the personality as a whole has a close connection with the physical permanent atom that is found on the first level of the etheric subplanes. The effect which they have is threefold. I guess all of these different higher points of tension, but is not simultaneous. They work ever, as all things do in nature, in ordered cycles. The stimulation, for instance, that is the result of the action of the monadic ray upon the mental unit is only felt when the aspirant treads the path or after he has taken the first initiation. And right there is an important statement. I mean, are we treading the path if we have not taken the first initiation? It seems to indicate here that to tread the path, or that the path begins at the first initiation, when you become the true aspirant. You're not yet an accepted disciple, you're on the probationary path, but it all begins at that point. The action of the egoic ray upon the astral permanent atom is felt as soon as the ego can make good connection with the physical brain. Now, obviously, or apparently, that's going to happen before the first initiation occurs. And maybe you will have experiences in your life where you feel that egoic connection. And DK talks about it as kind of a feeling of a ripple, maybe at the top of the head. A lot of phenomena occur in and around the head to indicate contact with the higher points of tension. So even before we are first degree initiates, and any really persistent student of Master DK, anyone who has chosen this line of teaching really to be followed, it has probably taken the first initiation. It was the case with so many of those who were in Master DK's groups. I think only one person had not taken the first initiation, and he was put into the groups out of gratitude from the master for propagating and financing the Alice Bailey books, and to protect him. Because interestingly enough, he had almost begun to tread the left-hand path in the previous life, which, you know, leads to disaster. And so DK was putting him in the right context to protect him. Okay. So when a good connection has been made between the ego, and we always have to watch that word ego, because in occultism, it means the soul nature in the causal body. And it means more things than that too, some higher things. So when this is so, the egoic ray is beginning to affect the atom powerfully and continuously. And we know that the atom is responsible, the atoms of the atomic triangle, namely the mental unit, astral permanent atom, physical permanent atom, they are the builders of those vehicles. So we certainly want to improve the quality of those vehicles, because they are our instrument, and we can do a lot more than we think we can to improve that quality. So the atom is being affected powerfully and continuously. This occurs when a man is highly evolved, and is nearing the path, but maybe not yet on the path because not having taken the first initiation. And DK tells us what it's like for those who have taken the first initiation. They're disciplining the life. They're interested in beautifying the life. They are interested in the occult teaching, but I would say in some legitimate spiritual teaching. Their minds are not entirely captured by dogma and all those old obstructions. Somewhere I have collected in my AAB extracts, which you can get on Makara, I think, and Joe can, has more than once put up how you get there. The qualities of those who can presume that they have taken the first initiation or are in process are listed there in the AAB extracts. So the threefold force is felt in the following way. First, it plays upon the wall of the atom as an external force and affects its rotary and vibratory action. Whatever atom it may be, I mean, as part of the atomic triangle, you know, the mental unit is not really complete. It has only three spirillae rather than seven. But if you somehow combine it through the building of the Antikorana with the monastic permanent atom, that combination will be sevenfold because the monastic permanent atom has three spirillae to the four spirillae of the mental unit. But the astral permanent atom has seven and the physical permanent atom has seven. Number two, it stimulates the inner fire of the atom. We all have, all of us are atoms, really. Human being is an atom too, and the planetary logos and his subsidiary lords are atoms, and so is the solar logos an atom. Okay, and they all have that inner fire. It stimulates the inner fire of the atoms and causes its light to shine with increasing brilliancy, which would be visible, I suppose, etherically. And people will begin to develop the etheric vision more and more because of changes in the ether and because of changes in the eye. And it works upon the spirillae and gradually brings them into play. Not all of those spirals and coils. You know, if you want to get into the technicalities of the atom, one can do that. Okay, but they don't all operate begin operating at the same time. They are sequential. So whereas a human being is having the fourth spirillae in operation, maybe that same human being is not especially spiritual and not having the fifth and sixth spirillae operating. Okay. Now, the section that we're working on at the moment is called the personality ray and the permanent atom. These are really occultly scientific foundational matters. It's probably something that we wouldn't normally read, having been developed as mystics over the past 2,000 years, and generally speaking, we don't have mystical occultists. We should, but we don't. We have people with ongoing mystical tendencies that seem to take some kind of satisfaction by saying that the mind is the slayer of the real. But DK points out that the mind is also the revealer of the real. And that's the attitude that that we want to take. The personality ray, and it is in a way the fourth elemental, because you've got the physical etheric elemental, astral, mental elemental, and combine those three and still stay on the lower mental plane, and you have the fourth combinative elemental called the personality. So the personality ray deals with the first four spirillae. The idea of the number four is very important, and the fact that our planet is the fourth in order from the sun. There are other little planets in there too, but we're talking about the main ones. Vulcan, I'm sorry. Okay, Vulcan, Mercury, Venus, Earth. So it tells us somewhere that our planetary logos has some personality issues, and that still our planetary logos, though cosmically an initiate of the fourth of the first degree, still is working things out in its personality, just the way we, a much tinier type of atom, may pass the first initiation, but that doesn't mean we're totally soul infused. We still have issues that we are working out within our personality, and maybe not until we reach the number four. Always study numerical affinity. Always study numerical affinity. Until we reach the number four for the fourth initiation, personality issues of ever greater refinement will be part of what we have to learn to handle. So the personality ray deals with the first four spirillae and is the source of their stimulation. The animal kingdom doesn't have that yet. They simply have three going, and maybe the plant kingdom too. And of course, I'm not the scientist in that respect, but if you follow the analogy, then the mineral kingdom, one spiral, one type of spiral. Note here the correspondence to the lower quaternary and its stimulation by the ego. The lower quaternary, in a way, can be considered lower mind, astral nature, etheric nature, physical nature. That's a fourfoldness. And the ego stimulates that. The ego is very much connected with the number five. And, you know, sometimes you even look at the way apples or roses or various plants grow, and they have a fivefold petal structure or seed structure. The number five is, like all numbers, a very sacred number, but it tells us that the possibility of the ego as the five-pointed star the possibility for it to be influential is operative. The egoic ray concerns the fifth spirilla and the sixth, and is the case or is the cause of their emerging from latency and potentiality into power and activity. And, you know, when I think about this, I think that if we are becoming soul aware and are learning how to focus our consciousness within the egoic lotus, then the fifth spirilla begins to be operative. And if we take a further step and are able to, via Antikarana building, project into the triad, then the sixth spirilla will be operative. And then the monadic ray is the source of the stimulation of the seventh spirilla. So in fact, what we, thank you, dear. Tui has brought me something to drink because she understands that what shape my voice may be in here. Not too many of us are going to have stimulation or growing stimulation of the seventh spirilla, or the seventh spiral coil. And all of the different parts of the atom are formed by what we call bubbles in the koilon. They are maybe on the cosmic physical plane the tiniest unit of construction that is available. So if you want to read a little bit about that in a understandable way, the long former president of the Theosophical Society, Jinnara Jadasa, I think in the late 20s, he was almost 100 years ago, he was president of the society. He wrote a book called The Key to Theosophy, or something like that. Keys to Theosophy, something like that. And he deals with, in a way that is perhaps a little easier to understand than reading Besant's and Leadbeater's Occult Chemistry. He writes about the bubbles in the koilon. Now, I'm not saying that the bubbles are not further divisible. Who knows? Maybe upon the cosmic astral plane, they are further divisible. But on the cosmic physical plane, which is where we pursue even our spirituality, they are the tiniest integrated unit. And certain numbers of them comprise the different types of atoms. I'm trying to remember whether it was 14 million or billion bubbles in the koilon for the etheric permanent atom. And those would be the secrets of initiation. How many of these tiny constituent units compose atoms of the different layers? Anyway, some of us will be undergoing stimulation of the fifth, and maybe if we are successfully building the Antikarana of the sixth spirilla, but probably not too many are having as a principal project the stimulation of the seventh spirilla. There is great interest, he says, attached to this subject, and wide reaches of thought and vast fields for investigation open up before the earnest student. Of course, you have to be careful how far you get into it, because it is dealing with the material aspect of life, and it can attach you to that material aspect. I remember once long ago, before an arcane school meeting, I just happened to meet a guy, and he was going there, and he was very fifth ray, and he just had to emphasize, say, look, I'm interested in matter. In matter, you know, he was just vehement about it. So, you know, matter is very secondary compared to form. You build matter into form, and the forms reflect the archetype. So we're supposed to be working much more on the constructive aspect, the form building aspect, than we are to become too thoroughly veiled again in matter. Somewhere DK talks about this. There is a great interest, yes. And we, he basically says, it opens up a great field of interest. This threefold action varies in point of time. I mean, different spirilla at different points of time. And sequence according to the ray upon which the monad may be found. But the subject is too vast to be handled at this time. You know, maybe he's giving us a hint that in the future, in the third installment, perhaps, some of this subject will be will be handled. But suffice it to say, we've done a lot of work already on the fourth spirilla. Our work now is with the fifth and the sixth. It's not like we get in there and manipulate the atoms and their parts in order to achieve this. I don't think we operate in that way. I think we simply take a deep interest in the soul, try to live as the soul, take a deep interest in the universality of the spiritual triad, and try to live the impersonal life under that triad. And then the material aspects will take care of themselves. The third ray type, maybe followed by the fifth and seventh, would get in there and try to actually make adjustments in those tiny units. But our approach is different. We work with the quality particularly, and then the necessary adjustments will be made. In looking at the matter from the standpoint of fire, the idea may be grasped a little through the realization that the latent fire of matter in the atom That's not the radiatory fire, right? It's the denser fire, is brought into brilliance and usefulness by the action of the personality ray, which merges with his fire and stands in the same position to the permanent atom in the microcosm as Fohat does on the cosmic plane. So what are the implications there? Fohat really is a way of describing Agni, and Agni is a way of describing the personality of the solar logos. And it's like this personality ray of the solar logos, which is the second ray at this time, will engage with the three permanent atoms that rule over the cosmic physical plane. Now, Saturn is definitely, the Tibetan tells us, the permanent atom of the cosmic physical plane, and Neptune is a correspondence to the a correspondence, but not necessarily the permanent atom of the cosmic astral, and Uranus of the cosmic mental. So he's right here drawing a great big analogy, okay? And Fohat is in general cosmic electricity, but it's also Brahma, and it is also the personality of the solar logos with its ray, and it will need a permanent atom upon which to work. Well, you know, and we might go a bit higher and talk about the egoic ray of the solar logos and find that it is the second at this time, and probably ongoingly, although the personality ray will change. And we will look at the monadic ray of the solar logos, which is probably 4 on its way to 2, something like that. And they will have that particular connection, the egoic ray with Neptune, interesting, and the monadic ray of the solar logos with Uranus, even though their rays are quite different. Now, Uranus is the strange bird because it does have a first-ray monad. That much we are assured of. We turn to page 420, 421 in Esoteric Psychology 1, and we see the esoteric ray of Uranus is the first, and it's also the home. Watch that word, home. Home of the planetary logos of the first ray. So, but strangely enough, it's also involved in an alignment between Sirius and Pisces, and then would come Uranus, and hierarchy, and so forth. It's involved in a great big second ray alignment. I've always considered that kind of a mystery. There are 6 different steps down and 3 different steps across and the constellations Leo, Pisces, and Capricorn are involved, and the planet Saturn in relation to Leo, Mercury in relation to Capricorn, and Uranus in relation to Pisces. So somehow why it is a member of a major secondary alignment escapes me for the moment. But it is. So Uranus will have its connection with the monad of the solar logos. The fire, now, this latent fire, you know what it is? There's latent fire and there's radiatory fire, and latent fire is that aspect of fire by friction, which is the crudest. Radiatory fire is also fire by friction, but it's not as crude a fire as the latent fire. The fire is hidden within the sphere, an important statement for all atoms. Whether the sphere systemic, that is our solar system, or the sphere atomic, the tiny little atom. And the personality ray, in the one case, for the sphere atomic, and Fohat, for the sphere systemic, acts as a force which brings latency into activity and potentiality into demonstrated power. So these are two great activators, both the personality ray and as well Fohat. We're a long way in our science from discovering what Fohat really is. We say cosmic electricity, okay, but then I asked some of my fellow esoteric, scientifically inclined friends, well, what is electricity? And the implication that comes back is that really nobody exactly knows. But I will say that when through the power of selective perception, unity is divided into polarity, divided into two-ness, into three-ness, the will to rejoin the unity is still very strong and inherent in those parts of the unity which have apparently been separated off from each other, and that electricity tells us about the method of rejoining the perceptually or self-perceptually separated parts of the unity. I hope that's a little bit clear. It's kind of a philosophical approach to what is electricity. As far as being a practical electrician and simply working with those forces, that's another matter. This correspondence, that is, of the personality ray to the atomic sphere, and of Fohat to the solar systemic sphere, this correspondence should be thought through with care. And you can tell, can't you, what some of the work in the new schools will be. The master or teacher will give out certain things to be pondered and thought through, and the correspondence is discovered, and it'll be up to the student to take the suggestion and do the work. Now, we may study some of this in the esoteric schools, which are preparatory. But the kind of thing we're talking about here is really more for the advanced schools. So the correspondence should be thought out with care and judgment, just as Fohat has to do with active manifestation or objectivity, the objectivity of the solar logos working through an objective solar system. So the personality ray has to do with the third or activity aspect in the microcosm. You know, every sentence here is of real value, and we just have to learn to ponder these things and come up with the light that reveals the meaning. The work of the third aspect, and remember, this whole first part of the book is about the third aspect of divinity. The work of the third aspect was the arranging of matter of the system so that eventually it could be built into form through the power of the second aspect. So matter built into form. That's what we're talking about. And the third ray is not so much the form builder, but it is the mover of those constituents of form which have to be put together and built into the form that the second aspect conceives. The two form-building aspects, especially the second ray and the seventh ray, but most of all, the second ray. It's called the ray of the divine pattern. And thus the correspondence works out. By life upon the physical plane, that life wherein the physical permanent atom has its full demonstration. I guess it can be influential in other ways, on other levels. The matter is arranged. Now there's that arrangement issue. And interestingly enough, the seventh ray is not only involved with form building, it's involved with arrangement. It's called the ray of exact arrangement. So the matter is arranged and separated that must be built into the Temple of Solomon. You know, there's a great deal of selectivity regarding how that which transpires in the lower worlds becomes quality within the causal body, egoic lotus, Temple of Solomon. So the matter is arranged. And when you see that word, and here we also have the selective aspect, arranged and separated out, and that is another important third-ray word that must eventually be built into the Temple of Solomon, the egoic body, through the agency of the egoic life, the second aspect. So there is a further type of arrangement and apportionment of the qualities prepared in the lower worlds. It's a bit like, you know, the old story, fable, the shoemaker and the elves. The poor shoemaker, he couldn't, you know, keep up, and he could get his shoes ready to be assembled, but he couldn't assemble them. He didn't have time, or he didn't have the knowledge, and he went to sleep with the shoes in pieces, but all the parts were there. And when he woke up, he found that there was an arrangement that had been made, and the shoes were completed by a higher aspect of divinity, something along the elves in this case are representing the second aspect. They're the ones who at night, when the shoemaker was asleep, you know, that has to do with the way our mind works while the normal consciousness is suspended. They stand for the second aspect. The matter is arranged and separated that must eventually be built into the Temple of Solomon. And the higher life begins to dictate to the arranging power of the third aspect. And together they work, and the completed project is there. So, you know, so many of us were asked the question, what do you think? Tell me your answer. And what do we say? We say, let me sleep on it. Well, that comes from a kind of an innate knowledge that some higher faculties can be at work during the hours of sleep, which can arrange and put together those elements which are not yet properly built into the form. In the quarry of the personal life, now he's using different analogies here. We're all at work in the quarry. It is hard work. You've got to take stones out of the quarry, right? In the quarry of the personal life are the stones prepared for the great temple. And a lot of people who are in masonry will recognize this kind of analogy between DK, even, well, he exposes a lot, really, between the rough stone or rough ashlar and the polished stone or ashlar. Because you can't build a rough stone into the temple. It's got to be polished, chiseled, it's got to fit. Some of those amazing structures, walls in South America, nobody knows how they did it. Huge stones lifted into position with exactitude was the power of levitation of heavy objects used so that the fit could be so perfect. But anyway, within our own Temple of Solomon, our own egoic lotus, we want the fit of the qualities which are there stored to be as perfect as possible. And that will make of us a true contributor to the causal body of humanity and to the causal body of others, and will be a spiritual force. Its existence, the great temple, its existence upon the physical plane, and I guess maybe the quarry, and in the objective personal life, is that experience gained which demonstrates as faculty in the ego. So in the quarry, the stones are prepared. In existence upon the physical plane, which is really experience in the quarry, the experience is gained, which, when polished up nicely, as maybe the the solar factors within us, the angel of the presence, solar angel, knows really how to do, when those rough stones are polished up nicely and made fitting for the temple, we have the way the egoic lotus is to be constructed. We couldn't do it ourselves. We do need that expertise that has been trained into the angel of the presence, let's say, to learn what to do with what we present. And now when you think about Devachan, which is like one of the higher heaven worlds, what are we doing in Devachan? Just having a good time or what, you know? And part of it is we are building up faculty. And part of it is that we're working upon the experiences that we have had in the lower quarries of life, so that those experiences can really abide and count for something by being built into the egoic lotus, our own individual Temple of Solomon. So that's what we call faculty in the ego. No ego is evil per se. There are just in certain causal bodies, certain egoic lotuses, there's just big spaces, so to speak, or lack of unfoldment of certain qualities which must be there. So it's a long, slow process involving the expertise of the solar angel, angel of the presence, and involving the hard work of the disciple or the aspirant who presents the stones that he or she has worked upon in the back-breaking, sweat-inducing labor in the quarries. The harder you work, of course, and the more you have to present, the more the ego can work upon them and produce really usable faculty out of what you have presented for examination. What is here suggested would richly repay our closest attention and open up before us reaches of ideas, which should eventuate in a wiser comprehension, a sounder judgment, and a greater encouragement to action. I think, you know, DK is being very practical. He's also being analogical. He's being symbolic. And we have to realize that every life should have its harvest. If you pause to think, what stones particularly are you taking now from the quarries of daily experience that can be built into true faculty within the egoic lotus? You know, the old, it's a George Kaufman play about a real madhouse of entertaining people. It's called You Can't Take It With You. And it was, the play was written a long time ago. Well, just what can you take with you? See, you can't take it with you. Man, enjoy your life now, because you just can't take anything with you when you go over to the other side. But of course you can. The occultly inclined person knows those things that you might be able to take with you. And they are virtues and skills and things you've learned. I mean, sometimes all the time, I'm amazed by the great pianist Horowitz, Vladimir Horowitz. He died not so long ago, maybe in the late 19th century, late 20th century, and was born in the early 20th century. And his playing, his orchestration, so to speak, on the piano are just breathtaking. I think no one could play the piano like Horowitz. He almost seems to me, I mean, I'm not really holding this forward as a serious suggestion, but he almost seems to me like the incarnation of Franz Liszt, one of the greatest technical pianists of the 19th century. Well, you know, when you have a life of playing such beautiful music so exquisitely and such technically demanding music with such great virtuosity, what do you take with you? You know, some deep understanding, wouldn't you say, of harmony and how beauty should be expressed and so forth. It's going to be extremely useful. The causal body will be colored by those great artistic faculties and will abide there for however long the causal body remains. And thus it is with all of the skills that we develop. If you become really proficient at something, you do take it with you, and it can be used on the inner planes. And you'll be put to work, and it will be used. So remember that in everything we do, we're planning for the future glory Christ in you, the hope of glory, of the transfigured personality through the glory of the soul. Our life is not just an idle experience. We are building all the time. And not only the pleasant experiences build, some of the experiences which are maybe not so pleasant are in there and making us what we can be. Well, look, I've taken things a little slowly. If you want to see things a little more in detail, you can read my written commentary on all this. Fascinating. The vibration, for instance, of a planetary logos has a peculiar effect upon all those who are initiates, adepts, and chohans, and brings their three major spirilli to the necessitated vibration. This work is begun when the sixth spirilla in the minor group of seven is active. So there's a minor group, this comes from a later point in Cosmic Fire, of seven, and a major group of 10, which is again the Kabbalistic arrangement of the three over the 10. So I've put in quite a bit of more precise stimulation. And is that the word I want? I've put in quite a bit of precision here in this writing. So it's not only Cosmic Fire, but I've drawn upon many things. As you see, quite a few pages were extended or presented in written form on the way from Roman numeral 2 to Roman numeral 3. So, okay, this is then the end of our program, number 49, and group program 45. It means I did some solo programs where I didn't, it wasn't an interchange with others. It was just what I thought might be interesting. So we'll start next time, and whatever we work with, it doesn't make any difference. We will get there. Program 50 and group program 46. And we're not in May anymore, are we? We're here in June, and this is the 11th of June. So no matter what it is we do, you will get from one place to another. And I will simply put this in as XX, and then you'll receive the weekly program and know, you know, what to do and where to go and what time it will be. Okay. Well, we've talked about a lot of things, friends. So I'll ask Joe to help us if you have any comments or you wish to say anything. You can do that. And We'll have a little bit of interactive time. If there's anything from your point of view, I forget tomorrow what we're doing. It's really easy for me to forget. I think, let's see, tomorrow is a Saturday. I'm not sure we're doing anything, but maybe we are. I just want to get that straight. And I think one of Francis's programs is coming up. Francis Donald, you know, he does a great job with secret doctrine and the secret teachings of all the ages. And let's see what I've got here.
This week, there's no events scheduled for Saturday. And the event scheduled for Sunday is the Ask Attracting Resources for Hierarchical Purposes.
Okay, great. I appreciate that. Appreciate that. I also sometimes appreciate a day off, you know. So
the next three are also broadcasts. So yep. we don't have another Zoom till June 18th.
Okay. Not another Zoom. Okay. Well, look, it's going to be sent to you anyway, isn't it? So let's just, this thing is sent to you. And here's, it goes from 7 to 20 and if I can, there it is. So you'll see it. This is sent to you, and today is the 11th, and then we have the attracting resources of money for hierarchical purposes, and then triangles broadcast and reappearance broadcast and dissipation of glamour Zoom on the 18th.
And also, Aria mentioned that the Brazilian soul webinar series by David Hopper is tomorrow for those who are living in Brazil.
Good. We want to stay abreast of the offerings of our whole team. So Francis, David, others, BL and Eva, yeah. Sometimes, and
I've been running the David Hopper's Brazilian one for Zoom, and they also have it in YouTube once it's posted.
Well, he's offering a lot of important foundational material. It's always hard to know where to start when you tackle something like the Ageless Wisdom. I was on a trip back in the year 1971, so it was 50 years ago. And I was going to see an esoteric opera, The Magic Flute. And I had to drive a long way, a really long way, from Fargo, North Dakota, all the way to Ann Arbor, Michigan. It was hundreds of miles. And on my way back, I stopped at the Adyar facility in Wheaton, Illinois. And I can say that, well, while the Alice Bailey books were not easy to reach, they were put way up on top. Maybe people wouldn't know what it was all about. I can kind of say that the psychology books fell off and kind of hit me in the head, so to speak. And I took them home and began to work in the field of esoteric psychology. What will it be for you? Maybe it's already happened, you know. Some people, they just dive into cosmic fire. Okay, well, fools rush in where angels fear to tread, but okay, maybe some people are ready to do that. And others are a little more cautious and they start with initiation human and solar, which actually is a book for the public, general public, though only a master could have written it. And basically the book that followed it very quickly, Letters on Occult Meditation, is much more difficult than Initiation, Human and Solar. Where will you begin? What is interesting to you? People who are interested in magic, they're attracted by the title, a treatise on white magic, or maybe they're interested in telepathy. Your starting point with the Bailey material can tell you maybe something about your key approaches to occultism. There's still one book which I have not yet fathomed as deeply as I should, and that's the telepathy book. I keep on saying, well, I'll get around to it. You know, I've read it here, read it there, but other people might dive right into it from the very beginning. And of course, naturally, the healers will select esoteric healing, many of them, even though psychology and astrology preface the healing work. And you need the background of those first three books, two on psychology, one on astrology, to understand as deeply as possible the healing. So just observe, you know, what among this great wealth of information DK has given, what attracts you the most, and it may tell you something about your future. Okay, now what have we got? Anything?
I do not see any hands up, and I'm not seeing any questions yet. Oh, Diana says she started with TCF.
Okay. Well, you know.
Just to read the words without a piece of understanding, she says.
I have a friend who, whatever Bailey book he read, he had a ruler and a pen, and he underlined every sentence. So I said, boy, it's going to take a lot of time to underline all that, you know. It's a little non-discriminating, but who knows? I mean, the occultism is the kind of study where you really, in a sense, if you understand at least a few of the basic principles, you can start anywhere. And you can eventually cover the whole field. Not that Master DK expects us to cover the whole field. He says, look, you can't really cover all aspects of my work, so choose something that is of real moment to you. But it's always tempting, isn't it, to look at that big book, Cosmic Fire, almost 1,300 pages, and say, what's in here, you know, and then do our best to find out.
I would just like to mention that one of the beauties, I think, of working with the Moria Federation staff and the presenters is that every approach is so integrated across all the work that we've got from the Tibetan. So that, for example, esoteric healing, that study group has integrated across those concepts from so many of the books, EP1, EP2,
yeah,
esoteric healing. And, you know, David's done the same, which is really a beautiful way for us to be able to work together. Anne has a question. She says, what would you think is the indication if the Dyna books were your first interest?
Well, you know, they are very psychological books. And the ashram is the major theme of the Dyna books. What is an ashram? How to work in an ashram? How to prepare to work in an ashram? It has to do with approaching closer to the master and to carrying out the will of that central monadic point who is the master. So, you know, it's a good place to start. As a matter of fact, he says, and I think I just said it earlier, use Dyna One. I guess Dyna Two had not yet been really published. Use Dyna One to attract people into the ashrams. Now, that's just a very plain and direct statement. And there must be something so compelling about the ashramic life that when they start to read Dyna One, they feel magnetized toward a closer relationship with the master and with his projects. So I there's just wealth of information. Some of my friends who are astrologers, and good ones too, they are researching the various people who showed up as students of the Tibetan and appeared with their papers in Dyna One. And sometimes when you learn a few of the personal details and a bit more of the horoscope of the individual, because DK does give you their rays, okay, but not their horoscopery, no. It's really fascinating who these people are. One man is a pretty high Mason. The other is a leader of a Rosicrucian fellowship. Another one is a political worker. You know, they have their places in the outer world, and discovering through research. Now, our colleague BL and other colleagues, Elena and Nicholas and Jeffrey and maybe someone else too. They really dig into who these people were, not because they want to know from a strictly personal point of view, but they want to integrate the horoscope, the profession, and what DK said to them and about them, put all those things together, and it becomes really fascinating. So Dyna One is a good place to start too. But you know, I think after all these years, if I were to recommend what to start with, I would say make sure you get initiation human and solar under your belt. I would say that after a lot of experience. And I'm always going back to that book and finding that what is written could only be written by a master, and that there is information there which is missing elsewhere, and you need it to make sense of what is found in the so-called more advanced books.
Heike says that she read them all in a row and couldn't stop reading them. And that was her experience. I'll just synthesize a couple. As Yvonne says, it's nice that the master gave an evaluation to his disciples twice a year. And Pivey says, could you advise which books would be best to tie together with esoteric astrology? TCF and Letters on Occult Meditation are under study at the moment. Is there anything else?
See, what's under study at the moment? Astrology?
What other besides Treatise on Cosmic Fire and Letters on Occult Meditation, which he's currently studying, what else would tie with esoteric astrology?
Well, the whole book, the whole series of A Treatise on the Seven Rays. It's a 5-volume series written on the second ray, and it includes the 2 psychology books, the astrology book, the healing book, and the great education book, Rays and the Initiations. Those are interrelated. on the second ray, and I think have so much to say about each other, you know. And I've done what I could, except with healing. I'm not particularly along that line, but I've done what I could to read out various sections that are found in astrology, all of the whole book, and sections in psychology, and the whole book of rays and the initiations. And I think you will find that there are all kinds of Mercurian interactive hints that jump from book to book. And I'm not excluding esoteric healing, because what I've read in it, I mean, I've read the whole book, but not studied it like the others. And what's in there is also information you can get nowhere else in his teaching. He doesn't like to repeat too much. He says it doesn't have a whole lot of profit. So what he does is he sends you on a big search and find mission, which is a whole lot easier now that we have the Alice Bailey CD-ROM. So look, you know, like my friend, I had a friend who got into this really early. And, you know, I don't know how she's doing right now, but I think she's about 80 years old, 81. And when she went into the esoteric bookstore and saw the hard copies all lined up, all 24 books, above the cashier, she just waved her hand and says, "I'll take them all." And, you know, that's a bit like what Heike was saying, "I've read them all." And of course, obviously, we put more emphasis on certain of them than we do on others. But with occultism, you can get from anywhere to anywhere else, I do believe. And especially in the 5-volume set of the rays of Treatise on the Seven Rays, they are very interconnected. They are all of one piece. Cosmic Fire is written on a different note. It's written on a third ray and first ray note. A Treatise on the Seven Rays is written on a second ray note. And look, nothing can take the place of study. Deep, continuous study, not because you have to, but because you're burning to do it. And just keep studying. And of course, that will help deepen your meditation, obviously, and will improve what you can give to other people. Because we're not just here to accumulate some interesting information before other people are exposed to the same information. We're here to share, so that the ageless wisdom really does win the day over the outworn approaches to religion.
There is a recommendation Yvonne puts forward, which I think we all support. She says she recommends you joining the Moria Federation in one of the three particular entry points, Meditation Quest, The Great Quest, and finally Quest Universal. And many people in that process then join different study groups or engage in different processes. And I'd like to just mention a couple options for people. One is, and I think Karen Gritzka had done this with one of Francis's series, it's to pull a group of people together who want to actually go through, like, for example, one of Michael's series that's in recordings. They watch it, discuss it together, and then, you know, move through the whole series that way. That's one approach. Another is to sort of step into one of the sort of augmented programs. We have one in esoteric healing. Actually, we have four in esoteric healing. And there's a new series starting for those of you who are interested in July. Nicole Resiniti is doing that. It's the introductory series. The group that's established has been working together since 2014. So we decided we needed a new group. If you're interested, just contact. And there are other groups that meet. So I think if you let us know what your interest is, and definitely do apply for the programs, because it's a wonderful way to get into a deeper relationship, not only with the studies, but with those who are on the same path.
Thank you, Joe. There's no question that we have accumulated an abundant offering for people who are really interested in going deeply into these matters. You can, when you see how Master DK thinks, how organized his thinking is, how almost in outlined form his thinking is, you just realize the centuries he must have spent in deep study of things that, you know, we have no notion of, and he's carrying them to us in a translated form for the Western mind. So much study lies ahead, much. And when the third installment comes out, obviously, that's not going to be any different. It's going to be very demanding. But really, the new schools are schools of meditation. That's what they're called. And probably meditation is the first ray aspect of the triple approach. Study the second ray, and service the third ray. So all three have to have some kind of balanced attention in our life. You'll have to decide how it will best work for you, but try to get your values straight, because at the moment, this is extremely valuable. 4 years remain for the period of the forerunner, and then we're off to the races with a whole new dispensation. So the gift continues to be given. I'll put it that way. Yeah, anything.
I am not seeing any additional comments and no hands.
Okay, well,
thank you. Yeah. Thank yous are coming in.
Yeah, yeah. And thank you. Thank you for your presence, you know, and for your tangible support for all of these activities. We just have to keep the ageless wisdom pouring out to people, because it's a great corrective to the kind of strange, retarding approaches which are still operative in the lives of so many millions. We have a lot of corrective work to do, and it's going to take a lot of skill and action, and you've got to know who you're talking to and what they can take and what they can't. And maybe even within your own family, the opportunity will arise. I know it has over the years in my family, and I've sometimes failed miserably and sometimes been a little bit successful. But it requires being very attuned to what is the next step forward, not only for yourself, but for the person related to you who may not quite know that next step forward, and which you can help bring into focus. Okay. Well, let's, if there is nothing else right now, and that's okay, let's close with the great invocation, remembering as well that things are difficult these days, and the lords of form are on the attack again. It's not an easy thing, and they're very skillful. So we have to help humanity avoid being enslaved by those approaches, which are so old and so selfish. So that's why I always think repeating the second great invocation is very important. Let light and love and power and death fulfill the purpose of the coming one. The will to save is here. The love to carry forth the work is widely spread abroad. The active aid of all who know the truth is also here. Come forth, O mighty one, and blend these three. The hour of service of the saving force has now arrived. Build a great defending wall. I forgot a couple of steps there, but, you know, repeat that to yourself, and you'll be part of the army of Lord Maitreya. Okay, great invocation then. From the point of light, within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love, within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Thank you, friends, for being present. And all of these things, you know, get posted on Makara, and Harold and Joe sees to it, post these on the Moria Federation Esoteric Education YouTube site. So if you want to recommend them to anyone, or if you want to restudy what we're talking about, then you have access. So we all on the communications team wish you lots of love and many blessings, and we'll just carry on, you know, as they said in the old arcane school days, just keep on keeping on. Okay, we'll do our best to do that. So, see you as we go along, and bye for now.